continuation from the discussion yesterday with Pierre Richard and Pete Rizzo regarding his latest article that he dropped on Forbes yesterday morning explaining Bitcoin maximalism and the differences between the different investment or worldviews in the greater crypto ecosystem. Really fantastic article. Both Pete and Udi, who are going to be discussing this topic, are here. So I'm really excited to get it underway. Eli, you can see that Rizzo's here as well. Let's get him going. I will be pinning the article to the top here. So if you have not read it, you need to be reading it. And with that being said, before we get started, gotta shill Bitcoin 2022. Conversations like these and much more, a lot of community building and a lot of business all happens at these Bitcoin conferences. I know that Bitcoin conferences have been career changing for me personally. That's how I actually got into the industry. And Bitcoin 2022 will be the biggest in Bitcoin history. And, you know, it's going to be an amazing time in Miami. So April 6th through the 9th, meet most of the people that you've been seeing here on Bitcoin Magazine Spaces in person at the conference. And yeah, use promo code Satoshi to save yourself 10% off. Save yourself some more if you use Bitcoin as well. So there's a flat discount on Bitcoin purchases. But with that being said, I will pass it off to Mr. Rizzo. What is up? Welcome back.
Yo. Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate the shout out for the article. And yeah, Udi, welcome. Can you hear me?
Yep. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Yeah, definitely curious to chat. I know me and you have had a few conversations recently about just the state of the industry, probably most recently about a month ago, but I know you've been sort of banging the drum about the current state of the conversation around Bitcoin maximalism and attitudes like that. So yeah, I guess
probably no one saw that. You're the only one who noticed.
Well, I don't know, man. You passed 100,000 followers today. I mean, you're an official. Does that make you an influencer now? Or are you an official
influencer status? Person?
Are you a professional now? Do they give you...
sponsored by Nike.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know. I guess I know that you tweeted out somewhat favorably about this article, or they're thinking that it brought something new. I'm happy to kind of just start the article generally. But yeah, I was just sort of keen to get your take, I guess, on if we actually really disagree on anything here, or whether we actually agree on most things. And if there are things that we disagree about, what is that?
Right. Well, I read the article. I loved it. I think that I might have disagreed on a few points, but I think the problem is that we probably disagree on almost everything. But I mean, you know, I've talked a lot about, or I tweeted a lot about toxic maximalism, but really what I'm talking about is not the movement, but sort of this behavior that I see a lot for just making the idea of exploring other things immoral. Because, you know, a lot happened this year outside of Bitcoin. It is true that a lot happened in Bitcoin too, and that's great. But also a lot of things changed outside of Bitcoin in the larger crypto space. And I'm not entirely sure that there's zero we could learn from it. Like probably most of it is not, you know, not interesting to us. But I'm not sure it's complete zero. And my issue is that I feel like we kind of pushed ourselves into this corner where we kind of have to say that everything going on there is just immoral. And I think from your article, I get the, and you know, from our previous talks, and I don't want to misrepresent your views, but I feel like you're basically saying, well, Bitcoin is hard money and it's revolutionary, and the way it's using its technology is revolutionary. And the others are not. They're, you know, they're more like fiat, and they're not really changing anything in that regard. So maybe they're doing other things, and that's fine, but that's not, that's like Bitcoin is separate. And
I think that. I would say that the argument definitely came out of a few things. One of them is just this frustration with this idea, and I think this really permeates in the non-Bitcoin community, right? That it's okay to sort of be neutral or agnostic to cryptocurrencies, and I've sort of been really trying to define like what that ideology really is, because it seems really prevalent in certain areas, right? Like you take the investor class or the journalist class, there's sort of this tendency to treat cryptocurrencies is just this big sheet of numbers, like this big list of things that are all very similar. So I think there was that frustration, and that I very much disagree with and have always or have disagreed with for a while. And then there's this sort of different attitude to the market, I guess, right? And I think this is where you're saying like things that have happened outside of Bitcoin. And one of those things is I think sort of developed a I don't know, like, a, you know, you saw this with the degen movement, like within Ethereum, just being very okay with sort of reckless financial activities and different sorts of behaviors that, I don't know, like seemed morally like questionable, right? So I don't know. I think like this idea that what are the cryptocurrency markets achieving? And then also kind of struggling with this idea where I think there are a lot of different ways to compare Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. And a lot of them get a lot of talk and some of them, you know, are a bit underrepresented. So obviously there's the economic argument for Bitcoin, which you just said, right? It meets the properties of money in a certain way. And you can compare other cryptocurrencies against Bitcoin that way. There's sort of the network, right? You can make these really convoluted arguments about how decentralized Bitcoin is versus other cryptocurrencies. Again, I don't know how immediately like valuable that argument is for people. And then you could even argue points about the launch, right? That Bitcoin is more decentralized because of its, you know, unique monetization and monetized from zero, spontaneously became money. And I feel like we've just heard a lot about those arguments. Whereas I feel like one of the things we don't talk about is just that, again, I think within Bitcoin, there's a stronger attitude towards user rights, sort of this idea that Bitcoin is a vehicle for financial freedoms and that it ensures those freedoms to a higher degree than in the cryptocurrency sphere, where you really don't hear a lot of talk about that. And I feel like a lot of that conversation is obfuscated, right? Like there's this idea that you can do all these like wonderful, wacky new things with cryptocurrencies, but we often don't talk about the very clear and actual trade-off to those things is a lot of those systems have much weaker views on user rights. I think that's pretty inarguable, right? I think you then get to sort of the more interesting questions, which, you know, and I think I've in a couple of the conversations I've had about this article so far, I think I've been able to push people in that direction is like, okay, well, if you do have Bitcoin, which is a system that appears to strongly guarantee user financial rights, well, what are those specific rights? And then to the extent that those are not present in other cryptocurrencies, what does that make them? Because it seems to make them something else. And if they are something else, like, well, what is it, right? And I don't really pretend to know that like we have to answer that question. It just, you know, again, like this is to me where it feels like there's the most strong division. Because again, like the other ways that you can compare cryptocurrencies, they just start to feel like economics. I mean, how many people are you going to tell to read some of the books that have become kind of standard lore, like the anatomy of the state, right? There's just like an upward bound on how many people are going to sit through and read something like that and come to like an economic conclusion about Bitcoin. So there's the network aspect, the decentralization, the network aspect, the launch aspect. And I feel like we've just worn out those arguments, right? Whereas I feel like the user rights argument is something that's a bit harder to articulate, hasn't been articulated, and I don't know, to me feels more valuable because I think that's, to me, like one of the arguments for Bitcoin that I've always found most appealing.
Yeah, I think it's almost inarguable at this point that Bitcoin and the rest of the cryptocurrencies just don't have much in common. They're like, they're digital.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's in common. But other than that, the similarities are pretty surface level. And it's true that Bitcoin does have this approach to, you know, upgradability and choice, or rather, it's even the lack of the possibility of choice. You kind of subscribe to a set of rules and you know that it won't change on you, which I think is fantastic. But also, I'm not sure, like, is that the only way to do things? So I think there are two approaches. And the first approach, which is the Bitcoin approach, is saying we have to be as resilient as possible. We have to be able to sustain any attack from the smallest economic actors to the biggest governments on earth. We need to be able to sustain any kind of attack because this is too important. We can't lose this war. So we're going to optimize for this kind of reliability. And that's great. We need that. And I think we shouldn't do anything that risks that for Bitcoin because Bitcoin is too important. You know, we don't want to add NFTs. And right. And in return, risk maybe Bitcoin being taken down by a government in the future. So the NFTs are not important enough. So I think for Bitcoin, that's the right choice. However, there's another approach. And the other approach is we're just going to shoot all of our cannons at those regulators. And we're just going to
Well, I would push back a little bit on the NFT thing, right? Because you're definitely seeing this from the cryptocurrency VCs. I think there was like Chris Dixon who tweeted this recently about how cryptocurrencies guarantee property rights. And, you know, again, he's trying to extrapolate this argument that I think Bitcoin and Bitcoiners have argued that Bitcoin ensures property rights. And again, like, I think that's a pretty valid claim because you have this idea that Bitcoin provides an irrevocable guarantee to money. But does that actually extend to the cryptocurrency class? So with the NFTs, like, and this is where I feel like the argument for like, oh, live and let live sort of becomes like weirdly nihilistic, right? It's that You know, if you have a system where people do not understand that they are giving up rights, then to what extent is it moral or ethical to actually advocate that people enter those systems, right? So NFTs are a perfect example. There are people who are spending $100,000, $200,000 on an NFT right now. To argue that they are fully aware of like repercussions of like buying something within one of these systems, or that we even as builders of these systems, right, really understand that, I think is not true. And that this is sort of where I would push back against that, right? Is like, you could say, okay, well,
I don't think you're pushing back because we don't disagree on that. Like, my point was that we don't want to bring over the NFT hype to Bitcoin at the risk of making Bitcoin weaker, is my point. I don't think we disagree on that either. But to the specific point, if we're going to bring up NFTs and how they work on other chains, then, I mean, sure, there are a ton of people who don't know what it is, similarly to how early Bitcoin investors didn't know what it is. I mean, surely we can agree that people who bought Bitcoin in 2011, right, probably yeah. none of them could understand what it is like we do now, right?
Yeah.
I think they do know, like, I don't pretend to know what every investor thinks, but I think the majority of them knows that this is a new category and it's unexplored and who knows. I think they do get that.
Right.
But sure, there are people who promoted in dishonest ways. It was true for Bitcoin too when it started. You know, like we had people saying that Bitcoin is going to be a payment network for the world and it's going to be zero fees. Yeah. And it's gonna, like, we had a bunch of stuff. But I think, so Bitcoin has this approach of being like very reliable, but then you have the other approach, which is saying, look, what we want to do is we want regulators to leave us alone and we want to be censorship resistant. Bitcoin is doing it by being super reliable. We're just going to do it by not asking anyone for permission. It's not a technology solution. It's just saying, it's basically giving the regulators the finger and saying, you know, if enough people do that, then it's going to be pretty difficult for them to enforce. And so far it worked. So far it worked. Like the last 5-6 years, regulators hardly were able to stop this. I don't know what happens next. Who knows? I mean, there's a lot of speculation, but so far it worked.
Yeah, I guess like maybe I would say like the article is something that I honed in on and maybe curious to like pick your brain a little bit more about, because I do think this was sort of something that I've started to think about and I don't really know the answer, but it's basically, I think I wrote that with the crypto agnostics crowd, like the people who support multiple cryptocurrencies, right, they seem to have this deference to like leaving the rights of the user up to the market, right? So they seem to be able to make this justification of, you know, in Bitcoin, if your right to that money is irrevocable, well, within these other cryptocurrency systems, it seems to be the case that the markets can invalidate those rights at different times for different reasons, right? So if you end up having a contentious fork, you know, what you're really saying is you're okay with the market making a decision about someone's rights, whether they have the right to that thing or not. So they end up sort of replacing like state authority over money, not with the individual's authority over money or some sort of guarantee to that money, with the authority of the market. And, you know, again, I don't know what to make of that observation other than I feel like, to me, that feels somewhat important, because if you're not okay with governments having the right to rescind someone's right to some asset, right, or something, like, why does it implicitly make it okay for markets to do that? And then if the cryptocurrencies as a class of technologies are essentially, if you view them as a financial system unto their own, if they're making the decision to let the market manage those rights, I don't know. It just seems like at that point, you're clearly creating something else, and you're clearly creating a situation in which like we don't know the known outcome for that. Like maybe you could argue the same thing about Bitcoin, that we don't know the outcome for making money an absolute right. But I don't know. It does seem like replacing government authority with market authority seems like a strange choice to advocate for.
I think your observation is accurate. I think that this is one of the big differences. Bitcoin is designed to not change exactly so that it can withstand all of those attacks. And the rest are not designed to not change. They're designed to be changed, like most human endeavor, and adapt and innovate. So then you have a question. So who decides what's okay and what's not? Because someone must decide. And if you're going to have some sort of an enterprise, someone must make decisions. So who is it going to be? Is it going to be the government? I hope not. In some countries it is, but I think we kind of hope that it's not going to be the government. So it has to be someone. So the way I see it, they're just trying something else. You're correct. The thing that they're trying is to let the market decide, which is kind of
interesting. Right. You're almost letting, but it's sort of when I get to like, okay, like hypothetically, let's just say like, what is the Bitcoin Bill of Rights? Like if such a thing could possibly exist, right? You sort of have this like irrevocable right to money, right? That's something we want to provide people. But in cryptocurrency, it's like, I don't even actually know that that happens, because it does seem like you're right to said asset can be revoked. And in the case of a lot of these DeFi protocols, I mean, that seems to be one of the fundamental mechanisms of them by just sort of pursuing this type of majority voting type structure.
Yeah. I mean, there are two angles to this. One is like the technical one. And on the technical angle, there are many ways to argue that, you know, if someone really wanted to, if the team or the project that launches something really wanted to, they could technically screw over people. And that's probably true. Those systems are not trustless. Almost none of them are. That doesn't mean they're bad. It's possible that someone wants that. There are a lot of things in the world that are trust-based, and that doesn't make them bad. It's just a different thing. So,
right, but I guess like you would argue then that like, I mean, wouldn't you agree that the prevailing outlook on the from the cryptocurrency market itself is that, I don't know, and I guess I'll just refer to the article and what I wrote about crypto agnostics generally, right? I think they see the market as providing evidence of the claim that these other cryptocurrencies are competing against Bitcoin, and that they see the market as like arbitrating the validity of those claims, right? Like to some level, that actually has to be a true statement, I feel like. Otherwise, the cryptocurrency market itself, and I said this yesterday in my chat with Pierre, it's just that the cryptocurrency market is almost this weird, it's so pervasive in our outlook to the industry. I don't think we've actually really taken a step back and looked at like what it is this thing has created. Like what is it that we're doing when we log into CoinMarketCap every day? And I think to a large extent, like the Bitcoin maximalist crowd has a much more divorced attitude to the market, right? Where they almost don't really pay attention to the market at all. And then you have this other group of people who are in the crypto agnostic crowd, where they truly believe that Messari or CoinMarketCap, like these mechanisms, which again are entirely human construct that never existed when Bitcoin was first created, are giving them some sort of meaningful insight on what's happening. And again, I feel like this sort of starts to boil up where, like, I think within the crypto agnostic crowd, I mean, they have to think that these cryptocurrency systems are competing against Bitcoin on some level. And I think they have to think that the crypto market is validating that claim. Otherwise, I don't know how they would have gotten where they've gotten.
This narrative exists for sure, and I think that we both see it as incorrect. But you're right, this narrative exists. People look at Bitcoin versus the other coins or tokens, whatever they are, and they're saying,
"Well,
maybe
they're losing."
You saw this with the ETH
is money, like the ETH is money crowd. Like that, I think that was like a weird phenomenon that, like, and even as someone who was like very, you know, early to like the Ethereum conference scene and things like that, it was just very strange to me, like how that emerged.
Yeah, and I think there's, as far as my anecdotal evidence is relevant, I think that there's a general agreement that that narrative failed. They're using it much less now, and I think they realize that it's not it.
Or like the ultrasound money was like another like weird.
Yeah, that's the one I meant. Yeah, the ultrasound money is the one I meant. Yeah, I think they're gonna back down from that one, but maybe that's speculation on my part. But it seems like that narrative is already dying down. But yeah, you're gonna have people doing that. You're gonna have people who are independent people in the Ethereum community who are gonna come up with whatever, you know, like, well, when I say something half jokingly like Bitcoin is digital real estate, and obviously, I mean, it's half a joke anyway, it's a meme. Half of the world is gonna disagree with that. That doesn't mean that Bitcoiners are scammers or they're like, okay, I said something stupid. Some people agree, some people don't, we move on. And similarly, you know, so they say Ethereum is ultrasound money. Some individuals say that, and I mean, good for them. So they're already climbing down that tree. I mean, I don't think it's a big deal. So whatever they said.
Pete, if I could go back to your article and the framing of the article, you know, you kind of like say there's this Bitcoin only crowd and then there's this crypto agnostic crowd. And I'm no stranger to the crypto agnostic crowd and their arguments. And from what I gather, a lot of their argument is kind of built on the base case that Bitcoin actually is not different than Ethereum and these other things, and that it too is governed by a social contract. You would term this as the market. And in the history, it's shown with the rollback and all this kind of stuff, as well as when Bitcoin's issuance starts to make its security fail, then the market will change the rules. So it's no different than Ethereum. And therefore, that's why Ethereum's monetary policy is going to be more deflationary and ultrasound, right? I mean, that's kind of like the mental thought pattern that a lot of these crypto agnostics have, is that Bitcoin itself is no different and does not protect user rights differently.
Yeah, well, I think that's a bit of a misconstrued thing. And I would just say that I think there were, to the extent that there were things that you would classify as hard forks. And again, I don't know if the Bitcoin developer community like agrees with that classification. To the extent that there was the developers taking steps to mediate issues with the blockchain and Bitcoin's history, this was always sort of done from a security standpoint where there was some necessary need to do so in order to prevent some sort of split that was essentially a malfunction of, like, you know, them trying to introduce something in the code and then there being some ramification or effect that wasn't intended, right? So there's never been in Bitcoin's history a fork that was introduced where if one side didn't update to these new rules, like where a new rule is introduced, and if whatever minority of people didn't want to agree to that new rule, they were then cast out of the system or had their rights to their money invalidated. So this is where I think it becomes like there is a bit of a technical distinction here, but it's important to make is that, you know, again, within Bitcoin, because Bitcoin has pursued this path of doing soft forks largely, you know, when new features are rolled out, you don't have to adopt them. Yes, a majority does have to form and a majority does have to enact an upgrade to the new code in order to enforce the new rules. But you still have this existence of a minority within Bitcoin. And this is something that I think took me a while to like really figure out or appreciate is that within Bitcoin, it's like you don't have to run SegWit. Like there are people who aren't running SegWit. You don't have to do that. And with Taproot, if you do want to upgrade to Taproot, great. But if you don't want to do that, you don't have to. You're still using Bitcoin. And these other cryptocurrency systems, there just doesn't seem to be any anecdotal, like none of this stuff has ever happened, right? Like in Bitcoin, you have these older groups that continue to run consensus software that just doesn't respect any of these new rules. So what does that mean? I guess the way that I would look at it and the way that I've tried to articulate it is I think within Bitcoin, you have this idea that there's a right to dissent. Like you have the right to reject or not go along with the majority. And then these other cryptocurrency groups, you just don't see that behavior. Like there's nobody, I think, in Ethereum or any of these other coins who's like running older software that doesn't go along with the new rules. Like
there's Ethereum Classic.
Well, right. So in that point, like those people were forced off of the chain and they were forced to bear the cost of creating a new cryptocurrency network, right? Like I feel like that's, you have to look at them as almost them being banished, like they were thrown out of the thing, right? Like, and I feel like the differing attitudes towards forks, again, this kind of comes down to the market justification. I think this is how the Ethereum community looked at the Ethereum Classic split, is that Vitalik was very keen to like move the moral consequence of his decision like over to the market. Like it was very convenient. It was like, you know, okay, should we invalidate this person's rights to his own money? Okay, well, we'll let the market decide. But in that case, like I would argue that that instance was very telling, because if you're willing to then put somebody's rights to the market, then you're basically creating a system in which the user's right is subject to the market. And I would argue that largely the cryptocurrency space beyond Bitcoin essentially functions to that. It's like you only have the right to your data or to your asset to the point that the market tolerates your right, right? So like in the case of Ethereum Classic, the market was willing to tolerate that person's right, like some minority of that market allowed it to continue to exist, but it was not recognized in the main chain, and there was a huge cost that was borne by the whole dissenting group to facilitate that. Like, yeah, and in Bitcoin, I'm like, if you don't want to upgrade to Taproot, no one's going to make you, and there's no penalty to that. There's no penalty that you face, you know, from that decision. And I guess the sort of where you get into like the moral or ethical kind of portion of this is like, well, in a system where somebody or some group uses force to coerce somebody to do something, you know, how have you not ended up recreating something that just works exactly like the fiat system that you were trying to build around? And I think that's right. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, so I'll allow myself to kind of reframe what you said without delving too much into technical details. I think like Bitcoin's uniqueness is that its own design and the design of its upgrade path is such that Bitcoin will always remain immutable. And when we say immutable, we don't mean that there are not going to be like technical changes to how our signatures work. And we don't mean that there's not going to be like, obviously, the ledger itself is mutable because we send coins from one address to another. So those things are obviously mutable. But what is immutable and promised to stay immutable is the monetary policy of Bitcoin. That is never going to change. And that's the uniqueness of Bitcoin.
Yeah, but again, I think it's like the weird,
all these other coins,
we keep talking to them as properties, though. We keep talking about these things as features. And this is why I keep trying to like evoke like the term right. It's like, okay, well, again, if you don't have, you either...
I agree with that. I agree with that. Like you buy those Bitcoins and you know, you buy those sats and you know that they're not going to change on you. And it's, you have as much say as anyone else, which is none, but you have this right to continue in this path however you choose. And it's true that all of those other coins do not have that. It's true. All of them, like literally none of the coins that you can find on CoinMarketCap, right, or CoinGecko, none of them have this feature. And that's true.
Right. The rights to your money within those systems only exist up until the point that the market will tolerate it.
The big difference is, the big, huge difference is between this and fiat is that you get to choose which one you want to participate in. And you can choose not to participate in. You know what the rules are. You know that they can change.
But I think that it's not being positioned correctly. Like, no one is telling the people who are using these other cryptocurrency systems, oh, hey, you're trading off this right to this thing for your ability to play at these, like, you know, do these wacky little games or whatever, right? Like, nobody's, like, actually saying that to them. What they're saying is that, oh, this is a new innovation that's better than Bitcoin, and you know all these other things that makes it better than Bitcoin. And then meanwhile, what they've done is they've just taken away your ability. Like, I don't think, you just don't have a choice in that scenario. There's no choice being made.
Well, I mean, there's a question of how individuals promote their coin of choice, which is a question that I don't like to ascribe too much morality to a project based on how individuals promote it. Because Bitcoin has the same problems, right? You have a lot of individuals in Bitcoin who say the most ridiculous and false things. So I don't think that that's a reason that Bitcoin is a scam. I didn't think so, you know, in 2014 when I told people about it, they told me, but this Bitcoiner said that and that Bitcoiner said this. I was like, okay, so what? That doesn't mean anything. So I don't judge other projects based on that either. But I think it's kind of hard to say that people don't know, because look at Ethereum, for example. Ethereum right now, and this year has been a year of transition for Bitcoin because it changed its monetary policy. Literally everyone knows that they changed it, because they pumped it out through YouTube channels and through like TikTok and through everything possible. Like, literally everyone who has the slightest interest in ETH knows that they changed the monetary policy. So saying that people don't know that the monetary policy can change is, I mean, how can they not know? They would not stop talking about it for an entire year. So I think people do know. Of course, they promote it as something that's positive and not something that's negative. And that's probably where, you know, me and you disagree with their views. However, they don't hide it. They talk about it all the time. So there's, you know, there's an issue of the style and there's an issue of how you present things, but they're obviously not going to promote it negatively, right? Like, you're not going to expect them to.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess the flip side of the right to a known money supply and predictable issuance is the right to participate or influence the money supply in the issuance. But again, I think this is sort of where you sort of start to wonder. It's like, okay, well, how does Ethereum not become like a situation where, you know, again, your rights are still subject to political groups, right? And again, I think, you know, me and you are aligned on this. Like, I don't think Ethereum and these other systems are going to fail like anytime soon. But my issue with them becomes, I think that you're having large amounts of participants like enter these systems. I don't think they really understand what is going on in terms of what they're actually agreeing to. And I think the real worry is these systems just get much bigger before we even understand them. And you find people who are locked into financial relationships they don't understand, with rights that they don't have, right? With even less rights than they have in the current financial system.
That could happen. I'm not saying that's impossible, but so far, it didn't. Like, so far, the trend has been that people seem to understand those systems more and more. Like, if you compare 2021 to 2017, and those of us who have been around remember how like mad and insane things got in 2017 and the wild promises that people made. So these days, participants do not believe ridiculous claims like they used to believe 4 years ago, and they understand those systems better than they did 4 years ago. I'm not saying it's perfect. It's obviously not. And it is all new. Like, even I, you know, I've been around for a little while. We both have. And I'm looking at a lot of these new projects. I'm trying to learn what's going on. Not because I'm not shilling them. Okay. I'm not saying they're great. Just saying I'm looking at them because I want to know.
Right. Right.
And and even for me, it's hard because there's a ton of new stuff all the time. So there's a ton to keep up with. And it's hard to tell what's an actual innovation and what's bullshit. But I think it's possible, and it's getting better. So the trend is investors understand those better than they used to, and also projects represent themselves better than they used to. I'm not saying it's perfect. It's not.
I don't know about better, right? I mean, I think within every, like, with every period of the history of cryptocurrencies, like, other than Bitcoin, you sort of have these, like, large, I don't know, you know, this is like looking at any period in history, right, where there's just sort of blind spots or there's sort of mass bias towards something. And I think, you know, if you look at the era of 2015 to, like, you know, late, let's call it late 2010s, you know, alternative cryptocurrency building, I mean, there really wasn't a lot of innovations that happened there, right? I mean, it was mostly changes to how the issuance was broken up, who could actually claim the issuance, and then how transactions were validated within those systems. I mean, most of those changes were yeah. happening within a very minute band of things, right? Where if you look at like Tezos or like any of these sort of alternative chains that, you know, again, the promise was some sort of better governance, right? Like this was the whole, I think, 2017 sort of big claim, right? You could change the way the blockchain functioned and you know.
Tezos like is an example of like one of the most honest projects of 2017. And I'm saying that with half of a smirk because there are obviously a lot of red flags there. But it was one of the best ones. Like the worst ones were the ones who were promising flying cars on the blockchain if you buy their tokens. And right. there were tons of these, right?
Well, I guess so what I'm saying is those like don't exist anymore. You know, what came out of that period, right? And like how did understanding of those systems really advance? And I would argue that not much has really advanced. Like I don't think there has been a tremendous advance in that area. I mean, I think you saw this last year where there was the emergence of, okay, so now there are systems that can provide financial service that have multiple tokens. But again, like, okay. Again, these are still systems in which the user is using some sort of money or some financial system where, again, they have a questionable amount of rights in this financial system opposed to some other financial system. But again, I think like this is one of the things with different coin projects is that they sort of want to pretend that they are something different than Bitcoin, right? That's essentially always the claim. Like if you really drill down far enough, it's always the claim is that they're doing something that can't be done on Bitcoin or that won't be done on Bitcoin and therefore they should exist. Where has that claim borne out so far, I guess is my question.
It's a claim that some people will voice, but I mean, like what's Apple's right to exist? Is Apple better than Bitcoin? I mean, that's a silly question, right? Like Apple and Bitcoin have nothing to do with each other.
Yeah, but Apple makes a product, right? Like they sell something that you can buy.
Well, you know, Aave sells loans. That's something that people actually do in very large volume. I didn't look at the numbers recently, but it could be bigger than BlockFi, for example, or the same like scale, roughly. You know, a lot of people buy those products. It's not nothing. And the fees that are being paid are being distributed to investors. So that's not nothing. That's something that's going on. And it's true, though, that in other systems, there is nothing. The thing is, because it's permissionless and anyone can start a thing, then if you're just looking at the number of coins that exist, then you're pretty much guaranteed that 99% will be bullshit because anyone can do it. But the top ones that actually do something, they're not necessarily complete and junk. We can discuss, like, are they technically sound? And are the monetary, well, it's not even monetary.
Well, again, I think that those, I think, are the bad arguments, right? Like, I think that those are the arguments, I think, that haven't worked. And I think that's why I'd like to introduce the argument of like, okay, well, I think certainly you can argue that the people within those systems have less rights than they would within a Bitcoin version of that system. But they're participating in a financial system in which they have weaker guarantees to their money or...
Yeah, but that's the wrong... That's correct, but it's the wrong comparison to make because comparing Aave to Bitcoin is silly. No one is buying Aave tokens and thinking that what they're buying is like Bitcoin. No one. Zero people. Because when someone buys Aave, they do know what they're doing because that's considered like one of the ones that actually do something. And right. then, so the correct comparison is to compare Aave to an exchange that offers lending or to something like BlockFi or these kind of products. And in that sense, it's very much reasonable to argue that someone who's using or holding the Aave token has more power than someone who's using BlockFi or investing in BlockFi. So it's at least a reasonable argument. Like you could say maybe it's not true, maybe it is, but it's at least a reasonable argument to claim that someone who's using Aave has more control than using the alternatives. And that's all it's about. It's obviously not more control than using Bitcoin and not more rights than when using Bitcoin. That's for sure. Like there's no argument. But no one looks at it that way either. Like people don't buy Aave because they think it's going to replace Bitcoin. It's just not, you know.
Right. Your argument is that they're buying it to fulfill some service and that nominally, like whatever the design scheme of the thing is, it fulfills the actual service and therefore is at least not a scam. But I mean, at least in that argument, you would argue that the only reason that that thing exists is that it's competing against Bitcoin on time preference, really, at that point. It offers something that Bitcoin hasn't built yet and therefore exists in some other state away from it in some sort of weaker type financial system arrangement.
All right, Bitcoiners, I want to tell you about our newest sponsor. This show is brought to you by Ledin.io. I have been super, super impressed with the guys over at Ledin. I've actually known the co-founders, Adam and Maurizio, for a very long time. I've had the pleasure to watch them build Ledin up from a tiny, tiny startup to now a super impressive institutional grade Bitcoin and crypto lender. Y'all, I'm so impressed with these guys. They are offering some of the best rates out there. I don't think anyone even comes close to touching them. You can get 6.1% APY on your first two Bitcoin that you deposit into Ledin interest accounts, and you can get 8.5% on USDC deposits. I mean, I know all the competitors. They're not even close. If you're going to put your crypto and your Bitcoin into an interest account, Ledin is by far the best. And on top of that, like I said, these guys are hardcore Bitcoiners and they know the products and the services that Bitcoiners want and appreciate. They came up with B2X. It allows you to put your Bitcoin in, they leverage it up, and you can, with one click of the mouse, get twice the exposure to Bitcoin. So if you're super bullish, Ledin has you covered with a super, super easy way to get leverage with B2X. And then on top of that, they know that Bitcoiners care about your reserves. They know that Bitcoiners don't like under-reserved and not full-reserved financial institutions. So they are pushing the frontier in transparency in the digital asset lending space. And they are the first digital asset lender to do a full proof of reserves and proof of attestation through a Mariano LLC, a public accounting firm. So the Ledin guys, they know what Bitcoin is like. They are legit. I encourage you guys to check them out. Do your own research and go to ledin.io. That is ledin.io, and learn more.
I would agree with that. I mean, again, I think they're different. You know, they're different things. So definitely. And Bitcoin cannot build everything. We don't want it to build everything. Going back to the beginning, I think we don't want to compromise Bitcoin's reliability in order to support something like, you know, like a fad, like NFTs. I'm not saying NFTs will disappear. I'm just saying that currently it's like it's a hype cycle. So you don't want to change Bitcoin for that, of course. So we don't want to support everything. We don't want to do everything. So we need those other things.
Yeah, I don't know. That's an interesting claim. I think that I've certainly lost track, I think, of what, and I'd certainly be interested when we drop some people for comments of like what the attitudes are from the builders within the Bitcoin community. I mean, certainly my outlook on Bitcoin is that it's a financial system that is going to improve exponentially over time as we continue to develop it. What it is that we want to build in those systems, I mean, it's certainly, I think, clear that we're not going to build multiple token type systems that invalidate the guarantee or the rights that people have to a known money supply. I think there's no appetite for that. But certainly with Lightning and other things, I mean, we've seen that there's a huge appetite for different types of systems that enhance the performance of Bitcoin asset and the value of the Bitcoin asset. So I don't know. This is where I feel like, you know, I understand where you're going with it, but I think the argument that we don't want to build those systems on Bitcoin seems a little weird to me. And it seems more like a time preference argument where it's like, okay, well, maybe we just don't have those now. And so therefore it's okay for them to exist elsewhere. And it's okay then as long as these people accept that they're in a situation where they, you know, have fewer rights than they would if this thing was on Bitcoin.
I think that saying that this is a time preference thing is almost, I'll be provocative, it's almost like anti-innovation. Like it has nothing to do with time preference. Like people want to build things if they're going to build it because they think they're going to be good things. Most builders that I know don't care. Like, yeah, there is a religious group that wants to build on ETH because they hold ETH and they want ETH to take over the world. That group exists. But most builders that I know, they don't care. They want to build a thing that they want to see in the world, and they're going to build it where they can. And saying that they have a low time preference because they want to do it now instead of waiting 20 years for something to appear magically on Bitcoin that will allow it, it's just that's not how innovation works. It's not immoral to want to innovate now. That's not a bad thing. It's a great thing. Now, whether or not Bitcoin can or cannot do those things and what we want it to do, I mean, it's like,
you know, sort of implicit in your argument that there would be some, well, you even said like, we wouldn't want to build these things on Bitcoin, therefore, like that seems like someone implicit in that argument is sort of some assumption that they're not going to get built back into the economy in some way.
Well, I mean, so that brings the question of what does it mean to build on Bitcoin? And do we want to change Bitcoin to allow things like, what I meant is not we don't want NFTs on Bitcoin. What I meant was we probably don't want to risk Bitcoin's strong properties.
On Bitcoin. I mean, the Blockstream has their whole, you know, NFT product, the rare Toshi.
Right. So that brings us our Blockstream's products on Bitcoin. In what way is that on Bitcoin? Like it's a separate blockchain. It has nothing to do with the Bitcoin blockchain. It's completely separate. You can use Bitcoin IOUs on that blockchain and you can use them to buy NFTs. Now, you can also use Bitcoin IOUs on Ethereum and buy NFTs on Ethereum. Actually, a lot of people do that. On OpenSea, you can buy NFTs with Bitcoin right now. So that's something that actually happens. happens, by the way, in pretty large volume compared to the Bitcoin projects that have roughly zero volume. So like the question is, what do we mean when we say it's built on Bitcoin? It seems like we have, and that's part of where I think our narrative is kind of getting shaky. And the things that we're telling the world are getting kind of shaky because we ascribe morality to blockchains randomly, even though, you know, all there are, Liquid, Ethereum, Solana, Tron, whatever it is, all they are is just separate blockchains, and you can transact Bitcoin on all of them with the same security guarantees and the same technology going on there. And we're kind of ascribing morality. Some of them are bad, some of them are good. Why? Because of association to, I don't know, to people.
Well, I mean, I would argue, I would push back a little bit against that and say that I think what we're starting to experiment against is like, okay, there are these rights that come with you as a Bitcoin user. You have the irrevocable right to your money. You have the right to review and propose code. You have the right to validate transactions. You have the right to known money supply and the issuance, and you have the right to dissent. But then, okay, if you want to exchange that right, if you don't, you know, for Stacks or like some of these other sort of token systems on Bitcoin, maybe you want to weaken that right. Do you have the ability to do, say, voluntarily? And as long as you're in a system in which you can go back to a layer in which there are stronger rights, is there somehow some moral argument for that? Right. I think that, well, that's where you would have to start constructing something and then say that clearly a system in which somebody can always default back to having more rights is advantageous to a system in which there is actually no.
But in what way? In what way can you do that with? You mentioned Stacks and Liquid. So in what way can you do that in Stacks and Liquid
that
you cannot?
I will 100% plead ignorance that I haven't looked into Stacks, and you know, again, people.
Okay, so the answer is it's the same. If you have Bitcoin on Stacks or on Liquid, it's functionally the same as having Bitcoin on Ethereum, and you can go back to Bitcoin with all of them, given that nothing breaks, and given that, you know, the federations that are in charge of holding the coins let you. So you have pretty much the exact same security model on all three of those. So I don't see any difference. The only difference is that we decided to consider Ethereum immoral, maybe for, I don't know, for how it launched 5 years ago, whatever. While Blockstream has control over Liquid, or arguably it's Blockstream and its federation of functionaries have control.
Yeah, but those are two different things, right? So again, going back to like you admitted earlier in the conversation that on other cryptocurrencies, like you do not have the irrevocable rights of money, that that right is only subject to the market's ability to provide you that right. So again, therefore, you're talking about them being two financial systems, one in which you absolutely have the right to your money, and that would be Bitcoin, and the other in which you only have the right to your money as long as some market or some majority of market participants tolerate your right to that money. So therefore, like in order to build something within that other system, you are taking all the attributes with it. So I feel like I understand what you're saying, where it's a bit confusing. And again, I'm not 100% all the way there in understanding like where everybody is with all these like side systems that are being built on Bitcoin.
But I'm telling you. I mean, those things, that's kind of my point. My point is, and my main point, you know what, maybe I should say this because the title of this room is Maximalism with Udi and Pete. And I'm not arguing against maximalism at all. Like maximalism is at its core, it's saying Bitcoin is, you know, it's super important. That's what it's interesting to us. And we don't care about the other experiments. We never did. And we want to do the Bitcoin thing. And I think that's 100% reasonable. I'm not trying to convince anyone that they should dabble in shitcoins. Absolutely not. However, I think that we are making, and I'm not referring to your article, which was great, but I think that as a community, we're making very bad arguments recently to why maximalism is good or its merits. I actually think that your article did a good job of presenting a good argument for what the merits of maximalism.
Well, that's because I feel like it relies a lot on comparative arguments that are hard to understand. That's why I go back to like really trying to boil down what are the arguments for maximalism. And I feel like there's really only at the heart, there's like four of them. There's an economic argument that Bitcoin somehow has the best economics of any of these financial systems. There's two, the network side of it, whether it's the most distributed, decentralized, whatever, and therefore your rights are the most insured. There's the launch and immaculate conception, which, you know, sort of gets weirdly deity or religious for some people. And then there's the argument about the rights, right? Like the rights that you have as a user in that financial system. And I see Alex Gladstein here, I think, has done a great job, you know, evangelizing for that cause. But I think like when we talk about the rights that you have as the user within the Bitcoin system, what we're often talking about is the rights that you have in contrast to the fiat system. And I think we haven't really done enough work to think about what are the rights that you have in contrast to the cryptocurrency system. Because if that argument has been so successful, and I would argue it is really the mainstream narrative for Bitcoin this cycle, that Bitcoin is, you know, sort of the moral financial system. It is, you know, inherently right or a good thing or an ethical thing to support. then how does that then extrapolate to the other cryptocurrencies? And I would agree with you. I think that that to me has felt underdeveloped, right? And for the reasons that you're saying, because I think oftentimes we've defaulted to making this economic argument or making this argument about the network, right? Like I just read this paper this morning, it was like 40 pages talking about how decentralized Bitcoin is and that we really like decentralized finance, but we actually really have to prove what decentralized means. And I just don't know how, you know, at the end of the day, if that is the way that you're approaching that argument, I don't know who you're going to win over, because I certainly didn't read economics textbooks before being in Bitcoin. I do now. I will say that I have learn from them, but you know, I don't think that's going to be a scalable situation for convincing more people that Bitcoin is a superior financial system. So again, I feel like we have to kind of go with what's working. What's working is like making these articulations for why Bitcoin is a system that provides financial rights. But again, I just feel like when we make that argument, it is always against the fiat system and almost never against the cryptocurrency system. The default attitude is to pretend that the systems don't exist, which I actually think is where I agree with you. I do think that I would like to see less of that, because I just don't think you can ignore those things forever. Because again, people are coming to the market, quote unquote, and they're logging on to Bloomberg, CoinMarketCap, or Messari, or whatever, and they're just seeing a bunch of things that look like stocks, right? Like, I mean, that is the default lens with which people are approaching this space, whether or not you invited them on Swan Bitcoin or whatever. Like, that is the way that people are coming to this thing.
Yeah, I kind of agree with all your points. I will just add one more approach to kind of evangelize Bitcoin in 2021, which is to meet people where they are and understand what their motivations are. And I feel like we've kind of lost sight of that because the rest of the cryptocurrency ecosystem changed so much in the last year that we kind of lost track of what other people are doing. And that includes a lot of newcomers that are, you know, exposed to Ethereum first or Dogecoin first or whatever it is. And we kind of lost track. We don't even know what they're doing. And it becomes very hard to even communicate with those people because we don't understand them at all. And for example, we talked before about things like Liquid and Stacks and other like Bitcoin sort of side chains or whatever you'd call them. On the crypto side, or let's say on the shitcoin side, people are like extremely familiar with this concept of taking an asset from one chain and bringing it over to another chain and then bringing it back, and the various degrees of being decentralized and the various degrees of what rights you get when you do that. They're extremely familiar with that because they do it all the time in volumes of billions of dollars between multiple chains at this point. Meanwhile, we on the Bitcoin side pretty much never done it because the actual usage of Liquid and Stacks is so low, especially compared to the other ones, but also compared to anything. Right, yeah. Now, it's so low. Most Bitcoiners have just never done it. So actually, what happens is those other people have a lot more experience than we do. So if we're going to talk to those people about those subjects, and we have to educate ourselves first, otherwise the arguments that we make are so bad because just because of our inexperience, that those people don't listen to us because they know better than we do.
I just want to jump in really quick, and I apologize. I've been up on stage, but I haven't actually been able to kind of attend fully. So apologies for that. But I just want to push back, because when you say that people in these other spaces and on these quote unquote side chains are super aware of what they're doing, that is not my experience. I would argue that the vast...
That's not what I said.
Oh, I'm
That's
sorry.
Not what I said. I didn't say they're super aware. I said they're...
They have a lot of...
They understand that better than we do because they do it and we don't. Are they super aware? No, they're not. But they're more aware than we are. We seem to think we have those preconceptions. We're talking about things we've never done. Okay, most of the people in this room right now, we're talking about things we've never
aware
done.
Aware of and what, we have, though, like, yeah, but they're looking at like transaction speeds. They're looking at the feature. They're looking specifically at the features of the quote unquote blockchain or the crypto.
So exactly. I guess my point is, how can you guys know that if you've never tried not Liquid and also not those competitors on the other crypto?
I mean, who said that I have not tried?
No,
that?
But it's not. I don't mean you personally, but if you're not actively using it, if you're not talking to the people who are using it, how can you tell that they don't know? How can you tell they don't know?
So I have talked to those people.
I'm talking to them.
Well, I just want to say, I don't mean to cut you off.
Most people.
I just want to finish the thought, and then I'll stop, because I know this is primarily a conversation between the two of you. But I have played around with fixed float and things like that, and I think my experience in talking to some of those people is that they understand the things that they are able to do. Like, so people will be like, "Oh yeah, like I know how to use PancakeSwap or whatever." But they don't actually understand what's happening. So they understand the thing that the tool tells them they can do, or that these systems enable, but they very, very few people, in my experience, understand the actual trade-offs that they are making. Very few people understand the actual value of that are in those spaces understand the true value of Bitcoin and understand what they're giving up and the risks that they're taking. And I mean, when people get rugged or when they, you know, when something gets hacked, I haven't yet to hear someone be like, well, I mean, I knew what I was getting into. I understood the risks of using a totally centralized system where I'm ultimately trusting like one entity to give me my shit back. People are
I hear that all the time. I hear that all the time. People say that all the time. They say, yeah, I've been rugged and I knew that it was going to happen. People say that all the time. Of course they know. Not everyone, but of course a lot of people know.
I think that.
Yeah, I think also where I get hesitated, P, maybe just to chime in on what you're saying of piling on there is because as we build up the economy on Bitcoin, it's like, are we necessarily going to avoid those things, right? So I feel like, you know, not to play a little bit devil's advocate here, but it's like, can we necessarily guarantee that like as we build more applications on top of Bitcoin that we're not going to have those same failures, right? So I think that's why like pointing to like the inefficiencies of the Ethereum economy or these other economies like sometimes feels weird because again, I can't speak for the builders or, you know, just what we want to build within Bitcoin on top of Bitcoin, right? Are you not going to build these things back? I understand we're not going to build them with tokens. I understand the, you know, value of expanding the utility of Bitcoin in that economy, but it's like, okay, well, are we not going to build these same things at some point? Are we not going to face those same challenges? So that's where that feels like a weird argument to me is I don't know how useful that is because you can make that argument today, but if you ultimately have to face the slings and arrows of that tomorrow, then like what's the value of that argument?
But Rizzo, the only thing is that even if we build things on Bitcoin and run into the same problems, the difference is that we need the things that we're talking about building for it to survive. You see what I'm saying? Every time I hear something new that needs to be built onto Ethereum, somebody comes up with ICOs or this or that, right? And they come up with these different genres of new digital assets. Then you wind up saying, it almost feels like they're doing that as a please pick me type of a situation. And Udi, I talk to people all the time who use all of them. And everyone knows that. Like on Clubhouse, I literally have four rooms with nothing but XRP people. I have nothing but Ethereum people, right? I do that all the time. And I think the biggest misconception that happens from a lot of those people is not that they don't know things. A lot of times they don't realize the amount of scale that can actually happen on these platforms. I think they don't really understand the actual amount of use that is really happening, not from the social media sentiment, not from seeing a bunch of social media posts and everybody looking like it's hype. It's about the actual use of the people that are actually interacting with these contracts. And I think that's the part of ignorance that most people have, even the people in Bitcoin, right? They see it and they get upset and it's not really used as much as people
are saying.
The actual use
is huge. And of course, it depends on what systems we're talking about. Like if you're talking about Cardano smart contracts, then no one uses them because they don't exist. And on other, you know, there are multiple systems that for sure people overrepresent how much they're being used. But the DeFi ecosystem Ethereum is used. Well,
Go to DappRadar, Udi. Here's the thing I'm saying.
What's huge is multiple billions of dollars in volume every day. That's pretty big.
But hold on, though. That's the problem. No, but that's what I'm saying. Hold on really quickly. That's the issue, right? Because what winds up happening, and I've said this many times on here, is that if you don't actually look at the amount of wallet usage into these contracts from a daily active user perspective, you're not getting a true feeling of what's really going on. Because just because a few people who have a lot of Ethereum are staking their coins into these liquidity contracts, what does that really mean? Like, this is just like basically saying the whales are filling it up because they know they can get it back, or they're the ones writing the contracts. And so then you use that as a metric when all you're basically doing is using it as a savings account.
Yeah.
Nobody's actually interacting with the contracts. If you only have 31,000 or 20,000 people interacting with the contracts or 20,000 wallets.
It's on-chain metrics,
Udi. Go to DappRadar right now. It's on-chain metrics.
I know the metrics. I know them well. The metrics you're referring to are about the value that is quote unquote locked in those contracts. And you're right that this is easy to inflate. That's why the metric I quoted wasn't that. I quoted the volumes, the trading volumes. That's just activity. That's not money sitting there. That's activity that people are paying fees for. So they're charged to do it. They can't just do however much they want. They're charged percentage fees. So this is real activity.
How much of that is ladder trading?
And Udi, that is 20,000 users a day. How is that huge for anything on the internet right now? If anything was only getting 20,000 users a day, it would never be considered huge. But in Ethereum, you keep saying that it's huge. Like, if you can go and look right now, Pancake Swap. I mean, what is it called? Sushi Swap. Like, you can go and look at these contracts and how they're actually being used on a daily basis. You can look at OpenSea. I think it's like 31,000 a day.
No, that's not true.
Go and look at the on-chain. Like, look at how many wallets. Look at how many wallets interact with OpenSea contracts on a daily basis.
Lamar, I know the numbers, and it's true that it's not like tens of millions of people. It's also not only 20,000 people use this. It's not true. Look, obviously, you're not going to have everyone transact and buy an NFT on OpenSea for $3 million every single day, right? If someone makes a big purchase on OpenSea, that's not going to happen every day. So looking at the daily active users is kind of misleading. It doesn't matter, though.
It's not, because if you just have a bunch of contillionaires, people that printed their own money, buying from other people who printed their own money, then basically you just have wash trading going on amongst people at the top that makes it look as if there's more traffic than there really is.
That is the fiat system, Lamar. You just described the fiat system perfectly.
Exactly, Mike. That's what I'm saying. So it's like there's no difference, and I don't know why people don't want to address it from that level.
I'm happy to address it to this level, but this is comparable to any other kind of enterprise in the world. And what you're saying is we shouldn't look at of any metrics of anything because there's a fiat system. I disagree. The metrics are still useful, even though, of course, they're, you know, incentivized by the fiat system. By the way, Bitcoin reached $64,000 per unit this year because of inflation. It's the same thing. Like, it's not that it happened randomly for the same reason.
Exactly, but that's why those numbers, again, that's why you can't look at how much money, quote unquote, dollars are wrapped up in something because of inflation. What I'm talking about is actual people interacting with contracts. Right now, the daily actual usage for the contract is 37,000 wallets, unique wallets on a daily basis right now for OpenSea.
That's for a single contract for a single day, and you have many, many dozens of these apps. It's not the same.
It's actually for five OpenSea smart contracts. And there are 118,000 unique wallet addresses.
Well, 115,000 is a lot more than 30,000.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is. It's five times more. And it's
compared
and it's
to.
Not,
compared
but that's
to,
per one day. What are you trying to say? Are you trying to say that NFTs are nothing? No one that cares about NFTs? It's a bubble. Only 100,000 people talk about it. No one else cares. Because that's ridiculous. I'm sorry.
Udi, no, listen.
Are you listening to what I'm saying? Yes.
So listen very closely to what I'm saying, because I'm bringing facts. This is not about opinions. This is about actual daily active using of these contracts. If you actually go through all the
hold on.
It does. It really does matter, because the reason why that actually matters is because that shows how many people are actually interacting with the contracts themselves, which shows actual usage, because that's the whole thing about blockchains. Like, you have to have people actually interacting with the chain,
Lamar,
to say that you're actually using the chain.
I'm going to pause this conversation real quick.
I'm kind of curious what Rizzo thinks here, because I think Lamar is making an argument that Rizzo, in this article at least, is saying, you know, he'd prefer to move away from.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think when you view them as a financial system, right, I think we're like too often making this argument like pretty myopically on like, okay, well, is this growing? Does it have enough users? It sort of makes us sound like weirdly fearful of like the success of like these random applications that, at the end of the day, like they might only be competing against Bitcoin on like time preference, right? They might only ephemerally exist for some time until we can rebuild them on top of Bitcoin. So I don't know. Again, I understand why these arguments get so heated, but I do agree with Udi a little bit here, where I think, you know, look, if there was a Bitcoin app that had seen that amount of usage. I mean, look at what's going on with the Chivo Bitcoin app in El Salvador, right? This is, you could just make an equally opposing counter argument that, you know, the user numbers over there are sort of inflated, and that doesn't really make it any better or worse, right? I don't know. They're just random metrics, and you can ascribe whatever value to them you want, right? And there's a lot of emotion ascribed to that. So again, I don't know. I feel like the more that I look at it, or I like to propose the argument, is just that, you know, if Bitcoin is a separate financial system, if you do have separate rights within Bitcoin, then that seems like where you start. And then with these other cryptocurrencies, you sort of have to say, okay, well, what are they doing? The more that you define other cryptocurrencies as just financial systems and Bitcoin as a financial system, so you start to deobfuscate some of these things where Bitcoin is digital gold, so these other cryptocurrencies, they must be something else, so we need to figure out what they are, when in actuality they might just be similar systems, and they might be doing similar things, and the differences to them might be a lot less obvious.
Did it drop for me, or can you guys
I can hear
me?
You, and I can also hear Pete.
Okay. I don't know how much of that people heard.
No, Pete.
I heard it all.
We can hear everything you were saying. Yeah.
You sound great, man.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, that's the thing, right? Is Bitcoin a financial system? Do we consider Bitcoin a financial system? If that is, then it needs to be defined by the rights that people have in it and the activity that we're within, right? And you have to look at both those things in context. If the other cryptocurrency ecosystem, what is it? They've spent all these years telling us they're not Bitcoin. Well, then what are they? What are they doing? The whole crypto asset thesis itself, I think is people are right to be suspectful of it, but I don't know. I just feel like I agree with Udi a little bit because I think what he's saying is that this argument that we're making isn't effective. And I agree with him because I think you could make an equally opposite argument for the way that we treat Bitcoin metrics completely oppositely to the way we treat NFT metrics. And I
Riz, though, I'm going to punch back on this one a little bit just because. No, because this is not my argument. I didn't even know about DappRadar to this year because I get in a space or in a clubhouse with other Ethereum people who tell me to go to DappRadar. I didn't even know about it. They were telling me to go there, right? They were telling me, hold on real quick, Udi.
About something that you were told Udi. A couple of days ago about people you don't trust.
No,
it's not, it's
Udi.
Like you're
Udi.
Closing your eyes.
Udi,
Lamar, you
Udi,
your
Udi.
Eyes. There is a lot of
information. Right, hold on,
Udi.
Udi.
Talk over each other, Udi.
Just stop, just stop real quick. I'll let you talk, Udi. Anybody who knows my debate style, I would definitely let you talk.
We're
I'm just saying,
I'm not debating you.
We definitely are debating. I'm definitely debating.
You are. I'm not
here's the.
All right, hey, let's. I don't like
you
this
really
kind of talk.
Okay, stop.
Lamar,
it's crazy. Okay. So what I'm saying is, this is how it happened, right? People were coming in telling me there was a lot of usage on Ethereum, and I was like, okay, what do you consider a lot of usage? There's go to DappRadar and see the amount of users that are interacting with contracts on a daily basis. They keep track of that based on the amount of transactions. It's a very easy metric. On-chain metric to actually get the metric of, right? To actually record. It's very easy to record this metric to see how many transactions interact with an actual contract and how many unique wallets do that, right? So when you look at that, right? When you go and look at that number, you say, okay, you're telling me there's a lot, but even Uniswap only has 25,000 active users on a daily basis. And you're telling me that's a whole lot of people. But if I said that for just a regular website, no one would ever consider that to be a lot of people. So it's not my argument that I bring forth. It's the same argument you're saying. Udi, you're saying I'm looking at it with my eyes closed. I'm in NFT spaces every single day listening to the people. Why? My son wants to launch an NFT. So I listen. I hear what is going on. It's crazy. People are really after it. They're trying to get these NFTs. Some people are looking at it from a financial standpoint. Other people are looking at it from a purely collectible standpoint. I understand what the hype and everything is. It's the same thing with the ICOs. You could go into these ICO spaces and see the same exact thing. And people were telling you, here's what the use case is going to be for this ICO and all of this, right? I've seen this before. I've seen it even before the ICOs. So it's like, now that we're looking at it, if we want to say who's actually interacting with these contracts, how many people are actually interacting? Even a lot of these NFTs that drop, the collectibles, there's 10,000 of them and 2,000 people hold them. 2,000. Now, it's not 10,000 people holding them. It's 2,000 people holding, which means the average person buys 4 or 5, which means it's a very small group of individuals that are out here buying these things.
Lamar, what's the point? You're making an argument about how many people are using them, and I just don't understand what that has to do with the conversation.
No, because that's what I'm saying. That's the argument that comes forth about the actual validity of Ethereum, is that a lot of people are using them. A lot of developers are developing on them. And that's what I'm saying. My whole thing is that why is that the argument? And then when you actually go and get the numbers, then it's like, well, you don't have your eyes open. And I'm like, I'm just taking the numbers off chain that you gave.
What you're saying is you're presenting information out of context. 100,000 people a day who made NFT transactions during right now, the NFT market isn't even that hot as it was a few weeks ago. During that time is a lot. Why? Because when you go to OpenSea and you browse and you make bids and make offers for NFTs, all of those actions are not on-chain actions. They're not seen on-chain because they're being done off-chain. So all of the actual activity, activity when you go, you open an app on your phone, those are not registered. All you're seeing is 100,000 actual deals that executed during a time that the NFT market is actually quieter than it was before. That's not a small number. That's actually a lot. And those sales, many of them are very big. So that's not a small number. Getting to 100,000 people every day that transact NFTs on this one single platform is not a small amount. And as you said, some of them do more than one trade per day. So it's really not that small. It's actually pretty big when you consider that a lot more people do not make a trade every day, but they definitely interact with those platforms. They definitely interact with the NFT. They definitely interact with those communities. And the reason I'm saying you're closing your eyes, and maybe you're not, because as you're saying, you're part of those rooms and you see the hype around this. But the reason I said it was because this is just one metric. When you look at it out of context, you can get the wrong idea, but it's clear as day when you interact with those communities and when you interact with those things, it's clear as day that there are so many people. It's not 100,000. It's very clear. Finally, the people who do the actual trade every day, yeah, it's not going to be billions of people every day that sell an NFT. You know, how many people sell a house every day? It's not going to be a lot. But 100,000.
Can I just jump in for a sec, Pete? I really appreciate your article. It's great. And I think that the conversation we just had is really helpful because, like, okay, is usage of altcoins exaggerated? Of course. But as Udi is saying, they're also like a global phenomenon that cannot be denied. Does bull market frothiness mask what's happening? Of course. But again, they're not going away. And you can see this in the fiat currency space. Like, there are terrible national currencies that live for decades, if not like 50, 100 years. So I think we need to know that we're going to live in a world with altcoins probably forever, right? Or at least for many decades. So the question, I think, is understanding why focus on Bitcoin. And that's why Pete's argument was important. I think it's incredibly important to help people understand Bitcoin, because as Udi said, you have to come at them from where they are. And from where they are is they don't know anything. And I'm talking State Department officials, people on Wall Street, academics, policymakers at the World Bank. Like, most of these people have almost zero knowledge about what Bitcoin is. They don't know Bitcoin from BitConnect or Dogecoin. Like, they just don't. So we have to start from the basics. And I think that's why I kind of try to have like this Bitcoin focus to help people understand why it's different from the other coins. And a lot of that's not going to have like an immediate short-term financial window, because Bitcoin's gotten crushed by altcoins in the last year. Obviously. I mean, look at Dogecoin or Solana or whatever. Now, in 5 years or 10 years, will it be different? I think so. But that doesn't really help our argument right now. So I think like the important thing is just to like show that Bitcoin is controlled by users and it's decentralized and it is beyond like the long arm of the law, and all these other projects aren't. And that's kind of really important, at least from a governance, you know, sort of political science point of view.
Well, again, even if they aren't,
there you go.
Even if they aren't, I think that there still can be problematic, right? And I think that's where I think that, Alex, I thought everything you said was great. I just think that that argument is even predicated on the fact that the governments will want to even shut these products down, right? And I think that even if that doesn't happen, they're still problematic, which is why, like, when you present an argument, I guess you always kind of look at it as, okay, like, let's just say that we all think that these projects meet the conditions under which they should get shut down. Okay, well, if that doesn't happen, it's like, are they still problematic? And I think the answer to that is absolutely yes, because again, like, in these systems, your rights to your money within those systems is not subject to you as a user. It is only the market tolerating your rights to that asset, the market or that feature or platform, whatever they're using. You know, the majority of users might collude against you at any time to remove that, right? So then I think it becomes the argument against the systems themselves, right? Like, with NFTs or decentralized exchanges or whatever, are we really saying that none of these things are going to get built back on Bitcoin, that we won't build something similar like these within the Bitcoin economy? Because I don't think that's what we're saying. So then why are we attacking them on the grounds that they're like poorly designed or they're stupid or that they're currently insecure? I mean, that's where I feel like the argument starts to feel sort of weird and defensive. And when I was critiquing Lamar's argument, you know, about 100,000 people using NFTs a day, again, the Chivo, look at the Chivo users in El Salvador. I mean, it's a similar number, and we're perfectly fine to think that that's a great number of people using a thing. So I think that the question then really goes back to, it's like, okay, well, maybe we do lack a little bit of direction on like what we are trying to build within the Bitcoin economy. Maybe that is a difficult question for us, you know, because these other things that are built in these other systems seem so problematic to us, because they do have fundamental problems, right? Like, in a lot of these cases, it is very charitable to say that these systems, you know, function by majority rule. And a lot of them, they function by the rule of extremely small groups who can collude in a lot of ways to rescind user rights. But I think focus on that problem, because that's the core problem. It's not the other things. There may be symptoms of the problem, but they're not the root problem.
Right. That's what I was going to say. NFTs, DeFi, ICOs, all of this stuff is the fruit, right? And I most of the time don't spend my time arguing about the fruit, except when people bring up and say it's being used so much. And that was the only thing I brought up. That's the reason why we got there, because we were talking about the delusional aspect of many people who are using Ethereum and all these other things that actually don't look at on-chain metrics and say so many people are using. So let's stop right there. But what I'm saying is if we get to the root, hold on real quick, TK, TK, if we get to the root of it, I think my biggest issue is what they're built on top of, which is what goes back to what Pete was saying. Like if we get down to the actual root of it, the things that a lot of these systems are built on top of are very insecure, not really scalable at the end of the day. And then also from the biggest part for me, they're not decentralized. And so therefore you lose out on all the censorshiplessness and all of those kind of things that actually make these systems, these distributed systems valuable. So that's all I'm saying. Like, I truthfully believe what Rizzo just said is the thing that I'm always talking about on a daily basis is the fact that at the root of the core of all of this stuff, you run into these issues with the actual technology
itself.
Yes,
sir. Yes, sir. We agree.
Bitcoiners, I am so excited to tell you about the Bitcoin 2022 conference. You guys, Bitcoin 2021 was absolutely a smash hit success. It was over 13,000 Bitcoiners coming together, breaking the barriers on who can come together and celebrate freedom, celebrate Bitcoin, and the energy was absolutely electric. Unfortunately, it was just oversubscribed. There's just people flowing out everywhere. And this year, we are learning. We are making the conference bigger and better. We are moving over to the Miami Beach Convention Center, and we are going to be throwing a massive four-day festival for Bitcoin, celebrating Bitcoin, bringing together the greatest minds in Bitcoin and the greatest businesses in Bitcoin. And lastly, the culture of Bitcoin all together. We have a four-day extravaganza planned for you guys for Bitcoin 2022. Day one is going to be industry day. It is a day where you can buy a special ticket in order to just mingle and make business deals happen. Day two and three is going to be a full-blown Bitcoin conference. This is our main conference. This is going to be on April 7th and 8th. And then lastly, we have the Sound Music Festival day four. Imagine going to Coachella, but for Bitcoin. There's going to be very few talks. It's going to be all about the culture of Bitcoin. It's going to be all about hanging with your fellow plebs. And it's going to be an absolutely amazing time. There's going to be Bitcoin musicians, Bitcoin artists, and all your favorite Bitcoiners, and just an amazing environment to party and just see it all, soak it all in, and to get people to realize that a Bitcoin world, a world filled with Bitcoin people doing Bitcoin things, is the world that they want to live in. That's what Bitcoin 2022 is all about. That is what the Bitcoin conference is all about. That's what Bitcoin Magazine is all about. So it is going to be a celebration of Bitcoin, the Bitcoiners, and this amazing movement that is going to make the world a better place. Go to b.tc/conference. Learn more about the Bitcoin conference. Learn more about all the amazing things that are happening in Miami around the Bitcoin conference and buy your tickets. And guess what? If you buy your tickets with Bitcoin, you save $100 on all the tickets and $1,000 on the whale pass. So if you want the VIP pass, the big kahuna, if you buy with Bitcoin, you save $1,000. That's a lot of sats. So go and do it right now today. Don't wait. Prices are only going up. This is going to be a can't miss event. Bitcoiners, I want to tell you about the Deep Dive. The Deep Dive is Bitcoin Magazine's premium market intelligence newsletter. This is a no fluff, hard hitting, incredible newsletter going deep into the market, helping you understand what's happening with derivatives, what's happening on chain, what's happening in macro, what's happening with the narrative, and what's happening with the tech. My man, Dylan LeClaire, is an absolute savant. He is making his name known in the Bitcoin community, getting shout outs left and right, getting on podcasts left and right. And him and his team are bringing you everything that you need to know about Bitcoin. You don't even have to be on Bitcoin Twitter. You can ignore every other newsletter. This is the newsletter to rule them all. Go over to members.bitcoinmagazine.com. Sign up today. And if you use promo code MACRO, you get a full month for free. You have nothing to lose. What are you waiting for? Sign up, see the incredible work that Dylan and his team are putting out. And if you don't like it, just unsubscribe. You don't pay a dime. But if you do, it's going to be well worth the sats in investment in understanding Bitcoin and gaining the confidence to continue to invest in Bitcoin and making the right moves around Bitcoin. And it's going to be well worth every single Satoshi. Again, can't recommend it enough. That is members.bitcoinmagazine.com, promo code MACRO. Do it today.
We have a lot of people in the room. I want to give people a chance to direct questions to Pete and Udi. Mike, you have your hand up. You've been here the longest. What's up?
Yeah, I just wanted to make one quick comment. You know, I own a lot of Bitcoin and absolutely zero NFTs. But as an increasingly sort of libertarian thinker, you know, I view them both as large scale free market experiments, right? And so I don't think it's my job to police Bitcoin users. It's not my job to police DeFi users or NFT users, right? It's a free market. If people want to buy them, whatever it is, then it's up to them to make that decision. And I feel like a lot of what I'm hearing, and I think I'm hearing a lot of agreement, but a lot of what I'm actually hearing is people in the Bitcoin community just don't like NFTs. They just don't like pictures of squirrels or cats or apes or whatever. And they find it offensive that they're being marketed in a way that they perceive as being dishonest. But I think we got to get out of the mindset of being the SEC. The SEC is already doing a terrible enough job of just doing what they're supposed to do. And so I would argue that we mostly just need to go back to building Bitcoin. And that means studying things like Stacks and Sovereign and Liquid and understanding them deeply, because it sounds like there's still a lack of understanding about how these alternative systems on top of Bitcoin actually work. So it's not really a question, it's more of a comment, but I just wanted to say that out loud.
Thank you. Rizzo, Udi, anyone want to respond to that?
I want to just throw it out there that I have like 10 minutes before I have a hard stop. So if we do want to take questions, I think now would be a good time. But I agree.
I have two questions for Udi.
Hey, friends. I definitely have a question because I really, really appreciate this conversation. I like where it's going. So, I mean, what's it going to be? I want to ask the entire community, like, what are we going to do here? Are we going to just do what Mike mentioned and really try to understand the innovation that's taking place on the Bitcoin blockchain? Or are we all just going to like sit and fight about how none of it works? I feel like Stacks. So early on in Bitcoin, or as me learning about Bitcoin, I'm an entrepreneur. So I'm like, what is the best way to create value being secured to Bitcoin? And the projects that I started looking at, one, for example, was Stacks. And I'm like, man, this guy, he's like actually trying to help entrepreneurs create businesses that is secured to Bitcoin. Because for me, my love for Bitcoin, I don't want to do anything with Ethereum or any other blockchain, because for me, it just doesn't make sense. But there's actually ecosystems that are starting to flourish, like Stacks, like Sovereign, that are changing the game so that we can continue to innovate and create on the Bitcoin blockchain.
Well, I would maybe just bounce off of that and just say, like, I think that's fine. But I do think that with Stacks and those other sort of token-based projects on top of Bitcoin, you sort of start getting to the question of user rights again, right? We've accepted that in Bitcoin, you have the irrevocable right to your money. We've accepted that we have the right to this known money supply and issuance. So I think what people have a problem with Stacks and Sovereign and these other things is you start to get the question of, like, okay, like how much are you protecting people within the Bitcoin? If it is true that what is it that makes Bitcoin different in the financial system? If one of those things is that you have the right to know the money supply and the right to know the predictable issuance of those things, then does the very fact that there is a token involved in those projects invalidate that right? And then to what extent do the users within that system have the ability to willfully and voluntarily trade off that right? I don't have the answer to that question, but I feel like that is how I would properly define it. It has nothing to do with the projects themselves and everything to do with like...
No, I appreciate that because you're exactly right. Like, I don't think that it has anything to do with the projects, but I think there's some misinformation about how the technology actually works. So with Stacks, and I could just quickly sum it up for you and hope that this makes sense, but Stacks uses something called proof of transfer for its mining mechanism. So think of this as like trading gold for currency, right? So like in the olden days, gold would be transferred to the US Treasury, who would then issue USD. And that's what worked. You know, all of us cheer that we had the gold standard until 1971. But the value of USD represented the value of gold. And the value of gold was based on the cost of both mining the gold plus like market speculation. So in the case of Stacks, like with STX, think of Bitcoin as the gold and Stacks as the currency. The way that we're looking at Stacks is that it is the gas that powers Bitcoin. So Bitcoin's value comes from the electricity and the hardware that it takes to mine plus the market speculation, right? Much like gold. So Stacks value actually comes from Bitcoin being spent to mine it. And the electricity behind Bitcoin gets reused and recycled into Stacks. So like, this is the mainnet, you know.
Munir so hey, on different. So Frankie, I apologize.
Yeah, go ahead.
We got 9 minutes left. I just want to go over etiquette really quick. I'm going to start removing people based on who's already spoken, just so people have a chance to chat. And I'd prefer one question directed towards Udi and Rizzo, and then I'm going to remove you while they respond. So we got 8 minutes left to get through things. I'm going to point this towards Andrew. Andrew, why don't you jump up? And thank you for the education, Frankie.
Thanks, guys. It's actually my first time using Spaces. And I definitely kind of empathize with what everybody's saying here. As someone who's, you know, been working on Bitcoin and working in the space since 2012. I mean, I think what was kind of interesting about kind of talking about like the time preference thing with Bitcoin and like, you know, what's an entrepreneur supposed to do if features aren't really, really ready and acceptable on the Bitcoin blockchain? And so, yeah, I mean, like, I think that's the biggest question is like, well, what is there to do if like as a Bitcoiner, right? Like we can't all get jobs at exchanges and even, you know, I mean, I think to the point of like the morally acceptable one, I mean, you know, is working at an exchange like that much more morally acceptable than like working at a quote unquote shitcoin company, you know, because, you know, where does the revenue come from and things like that. So yeah, I think that's my biggest question is to like, you know, if we take this, I guess the Rizzo perspective here on morality in the crypto space, what is there for Bitcoiners to do?
I think it's a good question and good to see you, man. I would say like, yeah, I mean, I think the thing that we've figured out is that if you're an entrepreneur, whatever you're building cannot come at the cost of the user rights, right? I mean, look at what happened with Lightning, right? There was a whole argument about how to reduce fees on the blockchain and to accelerate transactions. Lightning was the system that offered the chance to do that without eroding user rights and then giving them the chance to voluntarily opt into that system. So I feel like the answer is that you have to build systems that don't erode user rights. But I think that that prospect has been really unfriendly for entrepreneurs. And so they've chosen to not do that. So that's what makes a lot of these other like cryptocurrency projects seem pretty dubious, right? Like they have actually confronted that choice and then not made that choice, right? Which is why I think you really have to sort of laud the efforts of the people in the Lightning community to build what they did.
I think, Pete, we're finally going to have a strong disagreement here. If someone wants to build something, I think that what they should do is go and build it and not necessarily try to do it in the way that retains user rights the most, just because perfectionism is not how you build things. So, for example, if you look at products that people use with their Bitcoin, you look at something like exchanges, and you look at something like BlockFi for lending, and a lot of these products are remove any sort of choice from the user, any sort of right from the users, and that's what we end up with. I don't think that's morally better than anything. What I would say, if someone wants to build on Bitcoin, let's ask first, what does it mean to build on Bitcoin? And I think what it means is you build products that use the best asset on earth, which is Bitcoin, and they're built for people who hold the best asset on earth, which is Bitcoin, which are Bitcoiners. And this is what it means to build on Bitcoin. It doesn't mean you have to use the Bitcoin mainnet.
I would add that also the product increases the value of the 21 million supply, which is the whole reason
that
the consensus meds.
I disagree. I don't think an entrepreneur needs to care about that. If you want to, you build a solution.
But if you're not working to increase the value of the Bitcoin supply, which is the thing that the whole system exists to have consensus of, then like, what is the point of said thing?
Well, the point is that there are other good causes in the world. So if what you're trying to do is, for example, if I build a Bitcoin wallet that has easy to use multi-sig features, I would argue that's not going to affect the market cap of Bitcoin a lot, but it's going to be a useful product. Maybe it can improve people's
lives.
So
I was saying the extent that it needs to use some sort of token type thing that needs to come from the 21 million supply of the Bitcoin.
I would say that's a weird requirement to have. I would say this, if you want to give value to users, you build something that they want. If you want to build for Bitcoiners, maybe it's better not to have a token if you want to build for Bitcoiners, because maybe Bitcoiners don't like tokens. But you do what you need to do in order to build.
Right, but why do they not like tokens? It's not a preferential argument. They don't like tokens because they create economies in which they have like weird, usually weird centralized.
Hey, quick question: do we want to go on this conversation for the last 3 minutes, or do you want to ask some questions?
I feel like we finally started disagreeing.
I want to finish my answer that what I would recommend if you want to build on Bitcoin is build for the Bitcoin asset and build for holders of the Bitcoin asset and do that in whatever way is best for your product. If that means that you need to use Liquid or Stacks or whatever, great. If it means that you need to build a centralized service and that's the way you're going to build the best product, great. If you need to use Ethereum with BTC on Ethereum, that's great too. Do whatever you need to serve the needs of the customers you're trying to address, which are Bitcoiners. It's probably not going to be Ethereum because they don't like Ethereum, but maybe do whatever you need in order to provide the best experience. And I would say ignore entirely the notion that some technologies are Bitcoin friendly and some are not. Do whatever the people that you're trying to serve need. It's pretty simple. That's it.
Is this the last word? Well, yeah, I don't know. I guess, look, I don't even know if I've talked about this before. Like, I don't know whether to consider myself a Bitcoiner, right? I'm someone who certainly has been around and observed a lot. I certainly appreciate the ability to workshop, you know, an argument that I presented. I mean, I certainly think I've become someone who promotes Bitcoin only and that feels very strongly about Bitcoin. I think that I've tried to articulate the reason behind that. And so if you check out the Forbes article on it, it's basically just kind of laying out why I think supporting Bitcoin is an ethical stance and sort of starts to try to unwrap what that means about how other cryptocurrencies act as systems and why they might be sort of less ethical or have a weaker attitude towards user rights than Bitcoin. But yeah, look, I mean, I don't pretend to have all the answers, right? I've certainly been someone who's been yelled at my fair share over the years. So appreciate the forum.
Yep. Thank you, guys.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone who joined. Sorry for having to kind of be bad cop on this one, guys, but a hard stop here coming up and wanted to close it out the right way. So we will be having more conversations like this. So tune in and we'll hopefully do a better job managing the Q&A. But until next time, you can meet everyone that you see on these spaces, most likely in person at Bitcoin 2022 in Miami next April. Go to b.tc/conference to get your ticket. Use promo code Satoshi to get 10% off. And with that, I'll say goodbye. Peace.